all the hype. VOA 1 to Hits.
Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Ashley Thompson.
And I'm Dan Novak. This program is designed for English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases especially written for people learning English. Coming up on the program, Faith Perlow and Dan Friedel preview two very different movies being released Friday, Barbie and Oppenheimer. Then, Faith returns to answer a question from a listener about the words snug, cozy, and comfortable. Later, we listen to part one of The Law of Life by Jack London. But first,
two of the biggest summer movies are being released on the same day, July 21st. Barbie, directed by Greta Gerwig, and Christopher Nolan's Oppenheimer. The release of the movies has gotten a lot of attention on the internet and in social media. Many people are buying tickets to watch both films on the same day, creating the double feature event called Barbenheimer. The word Barbenheimer is a portmanteau, or blend word, of not only the letters of the words, but their meanings as well. There is even some disagreement about how the word should be spelled, Barbieheimer or Barbenheimer, or even Boppenheimer. Studios often target films in different genres for release on the same weekend. Oppenheimer is a serious drama about the man who supervised the development of the atomic bomb. Barbie is a colorful film about a popular line of American toys played by real people. Directors Gerwig and Nolan have enthusiastic fans online. Some people are fans of both. When a new advertisement is shown for one movie, both show a lot of social media interactions. There are even memes and t-shirts made about the release of the two movies on the same day. Paul Dergarabedian is a media expert. He said that the Barbenheimer marketing is good for both movies. You're certainly aware of both movies in a more profound and compelling way, Dergarabedian said of the two movies. Many theaters have already reported ticket sales for the double feature. AMC Theaters reported that 20,000 AMC Stubs members have bought tickets for both movies. That is over 4 hours of movie watching.
The stars say they are planning Barbenheimer days. Margot Robbie plays Barbie. She spoke at the movie's first showing in London. She said people should start and end their day with Barbie, watching Oppenheimer in the middle. It's a perfect double bill. I think, actually, start your day with Barbie, then go straight into Oppenheimer, and then a Barbie. The movie's star said people should watch her film twice. Actor Tom Cruise's movie Mission Impossible, Dead Reckoning, Part 1, was released just 1 week before Barbenheimer. He said that he plans to see both films on opening day, probably starting with Oppenheimer. Issa Rae is one of the actresses in Barbie. At the London premiere, she said, "There is a reason for people wanting to end their day with Barbie. I think that there's a very specific order that you should see them in, Ray said. Some people in Hollywood think that the July 21st date for the opening of both films is not by chance. Many wonder if Warner Brothers Studios wanted Barbie to open the same weekend as Oppenheimer because Nolan had opened other films like Inception and Dunkirk through Warner Brothers. Nolan left the studio because of a decision to send a year's worth of movies to streaming services. Nolan then made Oppenheimer with Universal Studios.
There is an unspoken rule in Hollywood. Never publicly say bad things about another studio's movie. This idea is connected to a belief that supporting one movie is good for other movies. If a person goes to one movie and sees advertisements for another, it might create more interest and help the whole industry. Cruise knew that his Mission Impossible would no longer be shown on the huge IMAX screens at some theaters when Oppenheimer is released. But Cruise posted photos of himself and director Christopher McQuarrie in front of advertisements for competing movies, Indiana Jones and the Dial of Destiny, Barbie, and Oppenheimer. Cruise posted the photos on his social media account, saying, "This summer is full of amazing movies to see in theaters. These are just a few that we can't wait to see on the big screen." Derek Garabedian said, "Not only is Tom Cruise the biggest box office star in the world, but he's also an incredible ambassador for the movie theater, for the movie theater experience, and boosting other movies." He added that the friendly environment created by competition in Hollywood was a good thing.
The actors, directors, and official social media accounts of all the movies have been very supportive of one another. Cillian Murphy plays Robert Oppenheimer. He told the Associated Press at the movie's London showing that, of course, he would watch Barbie. But everyone still enjoys a number one debut. Both Barbie and Oppenheimer reportedly cost $100 million to make, not including millions of dollars spent on marketing. The Barbie opening weekend could make over $90 million in North America only, while Oppenheimer is expected to make $40 million on its first weekend. But Oppenheimer may have a longer life into awards season. There is a lot of pressure on Barbenheimer to increase revenues for underperforming summer movies. And other issues, like the writer's strike, which actors recently joined, are on people's minds. For example, the actors of Oppenheimer walked out of their movie's first showing in London as the actors' strike was announced. I'm Dan Friedel.
And I'm Faith Perlow. This week on Ask a Teacher, we will answer a question about the difference between snug, cozy, and comfortable. Dear teacher, I am Zalat from Egypt. I hope you are well. I would like to know the difference between these words. Snug, cozy, and comfortable. Thanks a lot, Zalot. Thanks for writing to us, Zalot. All three words can mean the same thing. To describe feeling relaxed. But there are many small differences, and we can use them in different situations. Let's start with comfortable. Comfortable is an adjective. If we are talking about clothes or household goods like blankets or bedding, we can call them comfortable if they give relaxation or physical ease. My new bed is so comfortable that I fall asleep right away. I love coming home and putting on a pair of comfortable pants. We can extend the meaning of physical ease and relaxation to other areas of our lives. Comfortable can mean freedom from stress or worry. She lives a comfortable life out in the country, away from the stress of the city. The word can also mean being free of pain. The nurse asked the patient if she was comfortable after the surgery. It can mean having financial security. Zeke has a comfortable income now that he started his new job. We also have a short form of comfortable, and that is the adjective comfy. She loves to get comfy on the couch and watch her favorite TV shows. Let's move on to cozy. Cozy is an adjective and overlaps in meaning with comfortable. Something that is cozy gives the feeling of comfort, relaxation, or closeness. We are going to a cozy cottage in Maine for our vacation. We had a cozy chat at the coffee shop. To cozy up to can mean to get closer to something in order to get more comfortable, especially in cold weather. I love to cozy up to the fireplace with a good book. And lastly, cozy has a special meaning as a noun in American English. It means a covering to keep drinks warm or cold, especially if they are in cans or bottles. She keeps a variety of cozies in her kitchen for her guests' drinks. Let's move on to snug. There is a saying that we use often with the word, as snug as a bug in a rug. This saying describes the meaning of snug very nicely. Snug as an adjective has a meaning that combines comfortable and cozy into one. It can describe a feeling of contentment, warmth, and protection. If you feel as snug as a bug in a rug, you feel warm, safe, and comfortable. Snug can also mean fitting closely together. The tent at our campsite was snug up against the tree in the rain. Clothing can be snug, meaning it fits close to the body. Shoes should not fit too snug on the feet. And finally, as a verb, snug means to cause to fit closely or to make snug. We get another verb, snuggle, from snug. We use snuggle more often. It means to draw physically near for comfort. My cat loves snuggling up to me in the winter, so he stays warm. Please let us know if these explanations and examples have helped you, Zalot. Do you have a question about American English? Send us an email at learningenglish@voanews.com. And that's Ask a Teacher. I'm Faith Perlow.
That was this week's Ask a Teacher. Welcome back to the show, Faith.
Hi, Dan. It's great to be here with you again.
Today's question was from Zalat in Egypt. He wanted to know the difference between comfortable, snug, and cozy. Do you have any more information on these words?
I do. These words are great examples of the origins or history of English. The word comfortable comes from French. Cozy comes from Old Scots, originally spoken in Scotland, and is now a variation of English. And snug seems to come from a lot of different places. But the general area seems to be Old Scandinavian, possibly from Old Dutch or even Old Swedish.
Doesn't the word snug have some interesting history with ships? Is that right?
Yes, Dan. If a ship was snug, it was ready for the sea. Everything was compact and well-fitted, and the ship was also prepared for bad weather. Snug now means close-fitting, warm, and protected. And those ideas are similar to the original meaning that was used for ships.
Cool. Thanks for sharing a little history about these words, Faith.
You're quite welcome, Dan. See you next week.
The Law of Life by Jack London. Part 1.
Old Kashkus listened greedily. Although his sight had failed, his hearing remained good. The slightest sound was recognized by a mind yet active behind the aged forehead. Ah! That was Sitkumha, shouting curses at the dogs as she beat them into the harnesses. Sitkumha was his daughter's daughter, but she was too busy to waste a thought upon her old grandfather, sitting alone there in the snow. Camp must be broken. The long trail waited while the short day refused to delay. Life called her, and the duties of life, not death. And he was very close to death now. The thought frightened the old man for a moment. He stretched forth a shaking hand, which wandered over the small pile of dried wood beside him. Reassured that it was there, his hand returned to the shelter of his old, worn furs. He again began to listen. He heard the noise of the half-frozen animal skins being moved. He knew that even then the chief's moose-skin tent was being packed. The chief was his son, leader of the tribesmen, and a mighty hunter. As the women worked, his voice rose, exclaiming at their slowness. Old Kashkush strained his ears. It was the last time he would hear that voice. There went Greenhouse Tent and Tuskens. 7, 8, 9. Only the medicine man's could yet be standing. There, they were at work upon it now. He could hear the medicine man struggling loudly as he piled it on the sled. A child cried, and a woman calmed it with gentle singing. Little Kootee, the old man thought. That child was always weeping, and it was sickly. It would die soon, perhaps, and they would burn a hole through the frozen ground and pile rocks above to keep the wolves away. And what difference would it make? A few years at best, and as many an empty stomach as a full one. And in the end, death waited, ever hungry and hungriest of them all. What was that? Ah, the men binding the sleds together and drawing tight the ropes. He listened, he who would listen no more. The whips whistled among the dogs. Hear them howl! How they hated the work and the trail through the snow. It started. Sled after sled moved slowly away into the silent forest. And they were gone. They had passed out of his life, and he faced the last bitter hour alone. No. The step of a moccasin broke the snow's surface. A man stood beside him. Upon his head a hand rested gently. His son was good to do this thing. He remembered other old men whose sons had not waited after the tribe had gone, but his son had. The old man's thoughts wandered away into the past, until the young man's voice returned him to the present. "It is well with you," he asked. The old man answered, "It is well." "There is wood beside you," the younger man continued, "and the fire burns bright. The morning is gray, and the cold has lessened. It will snow presently. Even now it is snowing."
"Yes, even now it is snowing."
"The tribesmen hurry. Their loads are heavy, and their stomachs empty with lack of feasting. The trail ahead is long, and they travel fast. I go now. Is it well?"
"It is well. I am as the last year's leaf hanging lightly on a branch. When the first wind blows, I fall. My voice has become like an old woman's. My eyes no longer show me the way of my feet, and my feet are heavy, and I am tired. It is well."
He bowed his head in contentment until the last noise of the moccasin on the snow died away. He knew his son was beyond recall. Then his hand moved out from the firs to touch the wood. It alone stood between him and what lay beyond the death that opened before him. Now the measure of his life was a handful of sticks. One by one they would go to feed the fire. And just so, step by step, death would come closer to him. When the last stick had given all of its heat, the frost would begin to gather strength. First his feet would yield, then his hands, and the lack of feeling would travel slowly to his body. His head would fall forward upon his knees, and he would rest. It was easy. All men must die. He did not murmur. It was the law of life, and it was just. He had been born close to the earth, and close to the earth had he lived. Its law was not new to him. It was the law of all flesh. Nature was not kindly to the flesh. She had no concern for that single thing called the individual. Her interest lay in the race of man as a whole. He grasped this idea firmly. He saw its truth displayed everywhere.
the awakening of life in a tree, the bursting greenness of its branches, the fall of the yellow leaf. In this alone was told the whole history. But one task nature did give the individual. Did he not perform it, he died. Did he perform it? It was all the same. He died. Nature did not care. There were plenty who would obey. It was only the need that this duty be obeyed, not the man who obeyed it, which lived and lived always. The tribe of Kashkush was very old. The old men he had known when he was a boy had known old men before them. Therefore it was true that the tribe lived, that it represented the obeying of all its members, whose final resting places were unremembered. They were not important. They were chapters in life's story. They had passed away like clouds from a summer sky. He also would pass away. Nature did not care. To life she gave one task and one law. To continue the race was the task of life. Its law was death. A young girl was a good creature to look upon, full-breasted and strong, with a lightness to her step and a shine in her eyes. But her task was yet before her. The light in her eyes brightened and her step quickened. She laughed with the young men, then she turned away. She passed on to them her own unrest, and she grew fairer and yet fairer to look upon. Finally, some hunter took her to his tent to cook and work for him, and to become the mother of his children. And with the coming of her children, her beauty left her. She dragged her legs and arms when she walked. Her eyes lost their brightness. Then only the little ones found joy in the old lined face. Her task was done. In a little while, in the first famine or in the first long trail, she would be left, as he had been left in the snow, with a little pile of wood. Such is the law. He placed a stick carefully on the fire and returned to his thoughts. It was the same everywhere, with all things. The insects disappeared with the first frost. When age settled upon the rabbit, it became slow and heavy and could no longer run faster than its enemies. Even the big bear grew old and blind, to be dragged down at last by a small group of barking sled dogs. He remembered how he had left his own father along the Klondike River one winter. It was the winter before the missionary came with his books and his box of medicines. Many times Kashkush had recalled with pleasure the taste of those medicines. The one called painkiller was especially good. But now his mouth refused to moisten. He remembered that the missionary had become a worry to them. He brought no meat into the camp, and he ate much. The hunters did not like this. Then, when they were near the Mayo, he became ill, and afterward the dogs pushed the stones away and fought for his bones.
And that's our program for today. Join us again tomorrow to keep learning English through stories from around the world. I'm Ashley Thompson.
And I'm Dan Novak.